Hi, my name is Gideon Rothstein, and this is A Responsible Day for the 19th day of Adar. And today we're going to do one of what I feel and I experience as one of the most heartbreaking tshuva for two reasons. The first is the one that I'll tell you up front, and then we'll get to the other one later. The first is going to be that we're going to see two brothers who are writing to Rav Avadya Yosef, and this is in Shut Yabia Omer, Chelek Zion, the 7th volume, the Orach Chaim section, response number 23. It's from the 19th of Adar of Tavshin Lamed Chet. It was actually an Adar Aleph that year, Tavshin Lamed Chet of 1978. And these are brothers, and we'll talk about them. This is a family that has made a donation to a shul, and they have problems with how the donation is being used. It's going to be an example of where people who clearly want to do something good and positive and valuable get caught up in what we could all easily imagine ourselves getting caught up in, but when we're on the outside of it, can look somewhat petty. So before we start, let me not be petty, and let me remember to thank Rabbi Jack Abramowitz, David Hochhauser, and the OU for their portion of helping you have these shirim available to you. And then we'll jump right in. And the story is that this family had donated a parochet. So a parochet is a curtain that covers the Aron Kodesh, although I think in Sephardi shuls, sometimes you'll have curtains, you know, going all around, you'll have velvet, whatever is going all around, but they had donated a parochet. Let's assume it's the covering to an Aron Kodesh. And they had done it in memory of their older brother. So that's why I said brothers originally. It could be sisters too, for all I know. But a family of siblings had donated this parochet in memory of their older brother. And it had been, and he had died in a car accident. So they were upset about it. And they wanted to do something in his memory. And this is what they did. And they went into the, you know, the central sanctuary of whatever shul they donated it to. And it was there for 10 years. And then they were upset and shocked to find that the shul, although they wouldn't call it a shul because they're Sephardim, the kahal, right, the kehilah, the Beit Knesset, had switched it for another parochet, for another covering that somebody else had donated in memory of their brother, meaning a newer parochet came along. The shul said, okay, we'll use the newer one. So they turned to the management of the shul and they said, what are you doing? So the va'ad, the committee that sort of runs the shul, said, you know what, we'll use your parochet during the week, and we'll use their parochet because it's a newer one and therefore it looks better. We'll use that one on Shabbat and Yom Tov. And when your family donates a new one, as they had already intended to do so, then we'll switch them off a month at a time. So this family is upset, and they're turning to Rav Avadya Yosef, and they're saying, didn't they get prior rights? They had donated it first. Shouldn't they have the right, and it was for 10 years that it was their parochet being used, shouldn't they have the right to have their parochet be used continually and that be their right? So that assumes a concept called chazakah b'mitzvot. Right, that assumes that there's something like when I am the one who always does a mitzvah, I get a certain presumption that that's my mitzvah, it's my right to have that mitzvah, and to be the one to perform that mitzvah for this community. Rav Avadya Yosef thinks there is such a right. We'll get to that. Although his first set of sources is going to be people who seem to deny that there's such a right. So the Mordechai in Bava Batra quotes his Rebbe, the Maharami Rittenberg, Rav Meir of Rittenberg, who was the giant of his time, of the late 1200s in Germany. He was the Torah giant. He has shut that are very, very important, shut by Rami Rittenberg, and he has important students, including the Mordechai, who report his teachings as well. The Mordechai doesn't contradict this. He has this idea. So the Rami Rittenberg is asked about, let's suppose, a person who was machzik b'mitzvah, that's the term that's used, who has developed a presumption of a mitzvah. Now, the mitzvah is glila, is the example they give. So glila in our Ashkenazic circles is the one who rolls up the Torah. I actually never thought there would be a chazak in that mitzvah, except there's a shul that I know of where there's a man who does the glila all the time, at least during the week. Or they use his Torah, right? That's another thing. And he has some financial element to that. So something goes wrong in his life. He has an onus, or he became poor, so he couldn't support that mitzvah anymore. And therefore, somebody else did it for a while. And then after a while, that whatever was preventing him from doing it, whether it was financial or some other cause preventing him to do it, was preventing him from doing it, the Maharam says he should go back to his mitzvah. Why do I think that's true? What support for the Maharam's position? The Gemara in Yuma, on Daf Yud Bet, Amud Bet, talks about a Kohen Gadol. Let's remember the Kohen Gadol The highlight of his year, as it were, was Yom Kippur, when he would perform the whole day service himself on Yom Kippur. But he couldn't do it if he became Tameh, if he became ritually impure. And the real worry was that he'd become Tameh by Keri, that he'd have some kind of a seminal emission. Usually that happens when a man lives with his wife, but it could happen other times, by against his will, as it were, but it still creates Tumah, and therefore he can't that year be the Kohen Gadol for the service. They'll find somebody else to do the service. So what happens the next year? So Rav Yossi says, the first one goes back, and Rav Yochanan paskins that way, and the Tosfos say, why do I need to know this about a Kohen Gadol? So the Tosfos say that it's a nafka, that the reason why we don't need to know this halacha, meaning we don't always tell us halachos about what happens in various situations, because we'll talk about, they'll say it's called Hilcha, it's a question of doing that, is called Hilcha to the Mashiach. Why are you going to tell me halacha? Why are you going to paskin halacha? That you tell me this is the way it's supposed to go, that's part of learning Torah. But the idea that if Yochanan will come along and say the halacha is this way, that's an odd thing, because why would I paskin halacha? So the Tosfos says, no, it's a halacha that we need to know because it applies in our time to, if you have communal leaders, let's say a parnas, which is a financial responsibility as well, because parnasim also had to support the community to a certain level. So let's say something went wrong and he couldn't be the parnas anymore, so he has to leave his position. If he regains his money, then he will also regain his rights to that position. And then the Maharam says, and there are more examples of that. Another example would be, let's say you have somebody who commits murder bishogeg. Let's remember that bishogeg, although it's often translated as by accident, in the English language, when we say by accident, we often mean there was nothing he could have done about it. Bishogeg in halakha, that gets galut, that goes into exile to a city of refuge, to an ir miklat, that level of shogeg is not, there's nothing he can do about it. It's usually there was something he could have done about it, and there is an element of fault for him. It's not intentional, it's not deliberate, and it's not even karov lemezid. It's not even negligent murder, right? Negligent murder doesn't go to galut either. It's bishogeg, it's unwittingly, as it were, but it's not free of all blame. So that person goes to exile, and they go to exile till the Kohen Gadol passes away. So in Makor, in Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, Rabbi Meir says, what happens when the Kohen Gadol passes away and he comes back to town, and he was until now in some position. He was president of the shul. He had some position of power, of authority in his town, Rabbi Meir or city. Rabbi Meir says he goes back to it. He gets his job back. And now Rav Yossi happens to disagree there. But the Maharam says, when Rav Yossi disagrees there, that's because, first of all, Rav Yossi thinks there are psukim that specifically say, for Rav Yossi, or that specifically indicate, I should say, that specifically imply is hard to say, but that strongly imply, in a way that Rav Yossi thinks establishes halakha, that he doesn't go back to his positions. That's because he has verses for it, but in the general case, you weren't. And also in there, the man did something wrong. Because like I said just a second ago, he committed a murder. He didn't mean to, but he didn't also do all he could have done to avoid the murder. So that would be another reason that Rav Yossi would disagree. But fundamentally, the Maharam is saying, the sources seem to say that when a person loses a position for some reason, they generally get the position back when the reason goes away. Now, Maharam did say that you also have to deal nicely with that second person, and he has to take some of it as well. There's a story in the Gemara where, for whatever reason, it's not our topic, but for whatever reason, Rabbi Gamliel was removed from being the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, was removed from being the head of the Sanhedrin, instead Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah became the Nasi. That's a story that many people know because of that's the source where Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's beard goes gray overnight, or at least has 18 streaks of gray overnight. We refer to that, many people, at their Pesach Seder. That's all part of this story. So when Rabbi Gamliel got the job back, he apologized to Rabbi Yehoshua, who he insulted, and then he got the job back. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was given some time as well. Not as much time as Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel basically got the job back. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah got some time as well, and that's what Maharam B. Rittenberg suggests should happen here as well. The person who took the job over, when this person had to leave it for whatever reason, should get some as well. Now that idea appears in the Beit Yosef. It's ruled that way in Shulchan Aruch, in Kuf Nun Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch tells us, in the Shudah Radvaz, that even though, in general, just the fact that I did something doesn't give me rights of ownership unless I also claim that I bought rights of ownership in some way. With a mitzvah, doesn't make any sense. With a mitzvah, that idea doesn't happen anyway. The fact that somebody has done a mitzvah for a long time creates a chazakah, and that chazakah has rights to it, and means that I have the rights to continue it. Another example would be, let's say a person this, we nowadays, we talk about an electric bill, and but for until electricity came along, until electric lights came along, right, until Edison came along, you would light shuls with candles, and somebody had to pay for all those candles. So the truth is, the payment for the candles was considered a privilege, near Lama Or, something we refer to in our davening as being a great honor and a great privilege. So if you had somebody who always was providing the near Lama Or for a community, so that too is a chazakah, and he has the right to do it. And somebody else says, I'd like to do it, he says, no, it's my privilege to do that. You find another way, that's generally the way we assume it. Now there, Rav Yosef adds that there, you have a community of people watching and seeing that this man does this, and nobody is mochen, nobody says, why should you have the right to do this? We want the right to do this. So that's it seems to be an exceeding to the fact that this is his right. And then part of the problem also becomes, forget, not only is it his right, but it's also true that when you remove, if he were to be removed in favor of somebody else, there might be an implication that people had found flaws in him. So if we would say, you know, loudly, no, he's a good guy, he did everything well, we're just doing it because so-and-so also wants it, that's a problem because not everyone would hear that message and they might come to doubt. And that's an idea we see in the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Nun Tet Amud Aleph, that, let's say you have an Eruv, so let's remember that an Eruv is... Yes, it's a sort of wall around the city, but that's not the Eruv. That's just to make it, you know, when you put up fences or posts or whatever it is that we do that people call the Eruv, when they talk about checking the Eruv, they're not really checking the Eruv. What they're really checking is that which allows that community to think of itself as one big private property, one big Yishud HaYachid. The Eruv is when they take then some food, usually a box of matzahs, and they all become partners in it together. That's what that's the Eruv. It mixes their rights up with each other, and that's the Eruv. So where do you store that box of matzahs? You store it in the house. There's a bit of a privilege there. I am the place where the Eruv of the town is. So there, the Gemara says that we put that Eruv in the house in which we're used to putting it, meaning you don't change houses around. We put it where we're used to putting it. And it's, the Gemara says, Neidar Kei Shalom. It's a way of keeping the peace. And what that means is that... So some people say that it's because you don't want people to suspect this guy that he's done something wrong, right? You don't want people to say, oh, they moved the Eruv because maybe, now nowadays it feels like it's an odd thing to claim, but in those days, the Gemara, especially those times of much greater poverty, the Gemara thought that people would say, he's taking the bread. He's eating the bread there. That's why, you know, the rumors would start. And you want to stop the rumors from starting, so you keep the Eruv there because you don't want to imply that. So that's another element that comes up. If you remove somebody from a position that they have, there's often, unfortunately, some suspicion that will arise in people's minds, and want to avoid that as well. The Maharik makes that same claim about if somebody has a shul in his house for a long time, and some reason arises to move the shul, you really should try not to move it, because there's inevitably going to be an element of people suspect there's something wrong with the house in which they had it, and they'll be suspicious. So you generally, if he doesn't want them to, you generally shouldn't move the shul for that reason as well. You know what? I do this every time I review this tshuva. I always forget. The piece of the Mordechai that I took is apparently not the whole story, and I just haven't always, I never look it up again. But the Rav Yosef save things that Mordechai actually thinks, like I started off saying, Mordechai thinks there isn't chazakah b'mitzvah. So now he says, no, he thinks that Mordechai thinks, whatever the case was there, there's no yerusha b'mitzvah, which is a different concept. Let's say, you know, so-and-so has had this mitzvah for a long time, and then sadly he passes away, and the children want to come and continue that mitzvah. So that idea of Yerushalmi mitzvot is not a halachic concept unless the original purchaser of the mitzvah is very clear that he's buying it for himself and his children, his grandchildren. There can be such a thing, and then that would work as well. There are those who have different perspectives of this, though. The Zera Avraham, Rav Yosef points out, he held that when it comes to people who leave their position, so there's all question. Huh? Some people think they don't quite go back. Maybe they don't get to go back because the second one gets it. So there were those who claimed, for example, that about a parnas, as opposed to a kohen gadol, like we spoke about, a parnas, somebody who's just a supporter of the community, is running the community, that if the first one has to leave, there are those who held that the second one gets the job and gets to keep the job forever, and there is no such thing as going back to it. Shiv Chikrei Lev held, agreed with the Zera Avraham, who said, that in case of communal leaders like a Parnas, whose job is to run the community, to support the community, so he thinks that both of them can take turns, full turns, can be equals, that the reason that the Kohen Gadol can't do it that way was because you can't have two Kohanim Gadolim, there's no way to split the job. But in any job, there's a reasonable way to split it, he thinks that you're supposed to split it. And then the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, who had disagreed and said that the second one doesn't act as Kohen Gadol at all, he had said it was because of Eivah, because you have to worry that if there's now, if so-and-so is a Kohen Gadol, and he has to leave his job temporarily for whatever reason, he has to carry one time, and another guy comes in his place, and then for the rest of their lives, they're going to be switching off. So Rav Yossi held, you got to worry that they're going to have tension between them, because the first guy thinks it's his job. The second guy thinks, I got promoted to it, now it's my job. And so they'll have tension. And therefore, that's why he thinks that you don't have the second guy stay in the job. He just leaves. If that's true, you have to hold the same way about the Parnas issue, about the person who's taking over as communal leader, that you have to worry about this kind of tension between them. And therefore, maybe you would have the first guy come back completely. And the Magen Avraham writes about that. And that's a side note that Rav Yosef makes to say that those kinds of things can get more complicated. We're not talking about people, though, with this parochet, and so that won't be fully relevant. What is a more relevant concern is whether or not what happened with them counts at all as a chazakah b'mitzvot. Right? That's what the first top, the starting point was, is there such a thing as ownership of a mitzvah, or ownership of the right to be the one who performs a mitzvah for the community? That's an important, interesting topic. But that all assumes that their having their parochet be used established such a chazakah, and then theoretically you would say, and then when their parochet got old and they didn't yet have a new parochet, that would be like they left that mitzvah for a little while, the new parochet took over the mitzvah, now they want to come back to the mitzvah, do they get it back? That would be the first line of reasoning. But Rabbi Yosef points out that in Choshen Mishpat, the Rama rules that let's say you have a community who use one Sefer Torah for all of their Torah readings, and it belongs to a certain man, and that man has his Torah readings. So Rav Moshe says, if the community had another Sefer Torah, and they use this one, that establishes a chazakah, and then if they want to change Sefer Torah, this man can say, wait, it's my right. I have the right to have my Sefer Torah used. I want my Sefer Torah being used for the mitzvah. But if they only had this one Sefer Torah, so they used it for all that time, but that doesn't create a chazakah, that doesn't create a presumption that this man's Sefer Torah gets to be the one that you used all the time, because it was the only one they had. So if somebody donates another one, then, so the Rama says, then they take turns. Right? And that's what the Magen Avraham writes as well. The Magen Avraham says, if I had a community that didn't have, the community only had one Sefer Torah, then if the guy wants to claim that he had the right to the mitzvah, the Magen Avraham uses the phraseology of, it's a chazaka without a ta'ana. Remember, at the beginning of our tshuva, we said, usually chazaka, to establish a chazaka, like let's say people will say things like, you know, if I've used it three times, that creates a chazaka. In actual fact, you can only create a chazaka in halacha if you have, for things like owning a field. I'm living in a field, I've lived in there 5 years, and the guy comes and says, what are you doing living here? It's my field. So there's a concept of chazaka there. But the concept of chazaka there depends on me claiming that I bought this field at some point. Meaning, if this man, other man, can prove it had been his field at some point, I have to say, I bought it and somehow came into my position. If I just say, well, I've been living here 5 years, you didn't say anything, that's not, there's no such thing as squatter's rights in that sense. It's not like it was abandoned and I'm living here. If I wanted to claim it was hefker, that would be a ta'ana. I can claim it was made open and available to whoever wanted to take it, and I took possession. That's a ta'ana, that's a claim. I can claim I bought it. That's a claim. There's lots of claims that one can make. But in general, you can't establish a chazakah without a ta'ana, without a claim. So the Magen Avraham, using that phraseology, because of course here, we're not talking about the same kind of chazakah, but the idea that you want to create ownership of a mitzvah, so if you're going to say, you've been using my Sefer Torah till now, that's not a chazakah with a ta'ana, because they've only been using it out of lack of choice. So therefore, it doesn't give any right to me to say it, and therefore they says take turns in terms of your Sefer Torah, and that's how many Achronim Paskin, the Sneli Rabba, and the Chayyadam, right, the Rav Yosef is a big quoter, right, and the Gaon of Vilna, and the Chidah, they all agree about that. So once we come to that idea, then the fact that this community had used their parochet for 10 years doesn't even create a chazakah, because it was the only one the community had. So as soon as somebody else comes along and donates a parochet to the community, then you have to find a way to divide it. 1 month, month by month, week by week, whatever it is, but you have to take turns. And the Shabbos Shtaka said the same thing. There's no way you can think that somebody comes along and grabs a mitzvah, right? And there were other people who theoretically wanted to do it, but he just grabs it. Then all of a sudden you can say, oh, it's mine, too bad. And the rest of the people are going to be like stepping on his toes, and they don't have the right to do mitzvahs anymore to Hashem. How could Hashem, right? How could Hashem want that is the point. How could Hashem want there to be territoriality like that about mitzvot? So it can't be. And Shut Mishpatei Uziel, Rav Uziel, who we've seen on many occasions, also says there's no shavar. It doesn't make any sense that the leaders of a community, of a chevra kadisha, members of a chevra kadisha, can stop people from having the mitzvah of helping to do the great, this great kindness of burying the dead. That's what those who had passed away. That's what Uziel says. Now, Rav Yosef has a parenthetical comment that I find very interesting. It's worth thinking about So in terms of this sort of a slight digression into that question, let's say there's a Chavra Kadisha. Do they have the right to say, it's our right to do this job and not other people's? Bishop Deuziel, and a tshuva that we're not going to look into, and we're just taking the quote from Rabbi Yosef, says, no, they can't say that because in the same line of reasoning, we can't allow people to grab hold of a mitzvah to exclude others. In a note, side note, Rabbi Yosef says, it's not quite clear that that's true. The Magen Avraham quotes that in his place, in his towns, his communities, his medina, his area, where there's a Chavra Kadisha whose job is to do all of the people who pass away, then you have to give them the right to do it if they want to do it. And he quotes, and there's an Elia Rabbah who says he found an old Chavra Kadisha that had notes in it. And the notes said that when the Baal Alilot Ephraim, I found that interesting that it's referred to the Olot Ephraim, I found that interesting because I know him much more from his Chumash commentary, the Kli Yakar, Ephraim of Lunch, it's a very important Talmud Chacham. When he passed away, and he lived in the 17th century, when he passed away, his students wanted to be the ones, you know, to do the Tara, to do the Kavura, to do the preparations for the burial and the burial. And they said, when a great rabbi passes away, it's more mechubedek, it's more of an honor to the rabbi that his students be the ones to be involved in it, because that shows the students, it shows that he taught Torah, it shows all these great values. So they claim they should have the right to do it. And the Chevra Kadisha wanted to do it. Why do they want to do it? It's a really honorable thing. Well, I was the guy who was involved in the burial of the Olos Ephraim. I was the guy in the burial of the Kli Yakar. So they sent the question to the Baal Hashlah, to the Rav Yishaya Horowitz, who wrote the Shla, the Shnei Luchot the Brit, very important sefer, was very important Rav, and he paskin, and this is, I think, a very interesting psak, he paskin that since they do all these burials the rest of the year, they take off their time to bury people who need it the rest of the year, then they should be the ones who have the right to do it, and only if they want to give the rights up to the students, then they can. Now, Rav Yosef quotes that to say that Rav Uziel isn't clearly right about the question whether Chavra Kadisha can develop rights. There, however, I think it's interesting to, I think the point that the Shla was making wasn't that they developed the right because you can develop a right. It's that they sacrifice in other ways such that it's unfair to them to deny them the right in this case. It's not they have the right to bury because they've gotten the right to bury. It's that their exercise, it's that for much of the year, it's not a right to bury, it's a favor they're doing the community to bury. Meaning, when I do Galila, there are at least, there are plenty of people in the room who could do Galila just as good as me. So if I grab a Galila, then I'm grabbing a mitzvah that other people can do. Same thing too, if I have a Sefer Torah, nobody else has a Sefer Torah, that's one thing. But if I have a Sefer Torah, other people have a Sefer Torah as well, and they want their Sefer Torah used, I'm trying to grab this mitzvah, and I'm trying to grab the merit to their exclusion. So when the Mishpatei Uziel says, Chavra Kadisha shouldn't be able to deny other people, I think it might be, he meant in the sense that they were saying, let's say they just get territorial about it, and say, we're the only Chavra Kadisha in town in general. That they don't have the right to do because you can't get a chazaka and mitzvos in that way. When you're taking it, nobody's giving it to you as your right. Whereas the case in the Shlo was, where the people wanted to come in, didn't want to become a Chavra Kadisha. That maybe the Shlo would have agreed. If they wanted to become a regular Chavra Kadisha and there was a fight about it, that would be one conversation. They wanted to do this one because there was honor attached to it. That's what I think the distinction is. So Rav Yosef doesn't make that distinction carefully, but I think you could have argued that way. Coming back to our topic, so should Binyamin Zeev expand the Sefer Torah question? He says, even let's say Shul had three Sefer Torah, and then over time they got another Sefer Torah, or more Sefer Torah, but the old guys, not now it's not just one, it's three. But their three were in a rotation. They don't want any more, into the rotation. So he says, no, you can't. And the reason they say is because we used to have the merit to be one third, and now we're going to be one. We're going to have a dilution of our shares of this mitzvah. Should be Yemen Zev says it's ridiculous. How can you stop people from wanting to get involved in the mitzvah and from being part of it as well? And he actually says, and it's true of other things as well, like parochot, like the curtains that cover the aron, and all other clay kodesh. Right, that's a chibuv mitzvah. The more people bring, the better it is. it is. So you're going to say, yeah, but you know, when I donated, let's say, the crown for the Sefer Torah, I thought I was going to have the crown for the Sefer Torah is going to be used every Shabbos. And now you're telling me I'm going to have the crown for the Sefer Torah is going to be used only, you know, every fourth Shabbos because three other people donated crowns. I never meant to get involved in that. So the answer is, it doesn't matter. We don't have to care about that because that's a better kavod, that's a better honor for Hashem that more people are interested in being involved in this, and that's the way that it will go. So that's the way the Binyamin Ze'ev expresses the issue. Then he quotes another case where Rabbi Akiva Eiger has a problem about why the Ramah paskins that when there's a Rav in a city, anybody else can come and teach Torah as well, because competition in Torah is not a big deal, and you can come because but he was machzik in the mitzvah. And yet, we do have this idea of being machzik in a mitzvah, of having the rights to a mitzvah. And the answer again is because that Rav wasn't the only guy, because they had decided he would be the only guy. He was the only guy because he was the only one who was around. But when somebody else came in, all the more so. So you have these two situations. You have a situation where there's a chazaka given to a mitzvah, where people buy or in some other way earn the right to own this mitzvah or to have the right to be the one to perform this mitzvah, either short-term or long-term, and possibly even in perpetuity if that's the way the community decides to arrange it. And then you have other cases where they were the only option in town, and so while they were the only option, they were the ones who did it, but that did not create any presumption that others couldn't come along and join that rotation. So that will be true, therefore, so what you say about this parochet as well. Right, until now, your Beit Knesset only had one parochet, so they used it. But then when they got another one, they had the right to use that one, and they had the right to say that it's in turns as well, as they find appropriate. And therefore, Atzati emuna alechem achim yikari, my advice to you is, my dear brothers, and this is what, like as I started out, it's so sad for me, because these men, these brothers, want to do something good for the community. I don't need to doubt their sincerity. And they want to commemorate their brother who passed away tragically. And they want to do it in the best, and they're just upset because they think they've done something great. And now that great thing is being taken from them, and it hurts them. And I'm about to change that around, but I don't mean to change around in the sense that I think everything I said just now was untrue. But at the same time, they're saying we should have the right to mitzvah, and nobody else should have the right to the mitzvah, and they're trying to stop other people. And they're maybe getting into strife. So Rav Yosef is saying, my advice to you is, don't cause any machloket, don't cause a fight about this. And the Binyamin Ze'ev says you should never cause a fight about a mitzvah, because that makes it worse. It's much better. And we have a Gemara in Yom actually that says, she'atznuim moshchim et yideihem. There are times when this is about talking, I think they're talking about dividing up pieces, parts of like the lechem apanim, or things that Kohanim are supposed to get. So the tznuim wouldn't be involved in even taking anything, because the dividing of it was very competitive, because people thought that it would help you make you rich, would help make your life better, and they wanted to have a part of that mitzvah. So again, all those people who are fighting or getting into the ring, as it were, to try to get pieces of that mitzvah of the lechem apanim, they're thinking it's such a great merit to have it that I want to throw in, and you know, and elbows are maybe being thrown and whatever. And the Gemara says, and the Rav Yosef is quoting, "Shatznuim moshkim et yadam," that the people who are tznuim, who understand Torah the best, who are, you know, modest and don't want to get into fights, they are seen as the higher value. They don't take. So they don't take means they don't get the merit of eating lechem apanim, but on the other hand, they're not involved in the fights. And therefore, Rabbi Yosef is advising them, and he says, you really should know that by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by Hashem, as far as Hashem is concerned, your merit is no lower for the fact that somebody else comes in and joins the mitzvah. You get a great credit that you started out, and you continue to get credit that your parochet is being used. V'rachmana liba bai. And Hashem cares about the heart. Hashem cares what's inside of you. What's inside of you is these great motives, and those will continue to be a merit for you. And the fact that your parochet is going to take turns, it's not anything to worry about. Nor to think that any of your reward is being lessened. And then nachat ruach, also again, remember, they're doing it to commemorate their brother, and they're feeling like, well, it used to be my brother was commemorated every day in this Beit Knesset, and now it's going to turn out he's only commemorated every other day, every other week, every other month. It's so much worse for him now. So he says, don't worry about that too. It's going to be, you know, the merits that went to your brother for his Ilui HaNeshama to help his soul, however that means, it's all on the same level, and he will get credit in the world to come, and he'll get Nachat Ruach, he'll get calmness and serenity from the fact that you're doing what Hashem wants, and that you step back from this because Hashem wants you to step back. That's just as good, if not better, for a merit for your brother, and therefore, please don't. The best thing is not to cause a fight about it. The derech of Torah is drachei ha-derechei noam, to do it in pleasant ways and to love peace and truth. The pasuk says ha-emet v'shalom, truth and peace. Havu, so it's truth and peace, and that's the way he signs the letter. And then he signs it, and this is the other piece that I was telling you about that breaks my heart. Doesn't break my heart, but it bothers me. He signs it, Ravad Yosef, Rishon Litzion, Rav Rashi Yisrael. So that's something you might not have remembered when I gave you the year. 1978, Ravad Yosef is 58 years old, and this is the 19th of Adar. He's 58 years old. He's the chief rabbi, the Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel. I would have thought to myself that the Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel has lots and lots of issues to deal with. And yet, these are the kinds of questions, some of the kinds of questions that are being brought to him about brothers who are concerned with the parochet. So it's a reminder of how we can let something so good become something so small and petty if we're not careful. So in the end, we can hope, and I assume, the brothers took his advice and everything went fine and peace was restored and everyone was very happy with each other, as he had said, and they all found truth and peace. But it's a reminder of things that we can treat people who are great Torah scholars, with the chief rabbi of Israel, you know, in that time, chief rabbi of Israel, and Ravad Yosef, forget chief rabbi of Israel, Ravad Yosef, and burden them with the small kleinikite, is the word that comes to mind, these small little things, these pachim ktanim, that seem so important to us, but that in the larger picture aren't that much. But meanwhile, they provided us an opportunity to learn a lot about who owns mitzvot. Is there such a thing as ownership of mitzvot? Is there such a thing as passing on mitzvot to our children? Is there such a thing as grabbing a mitzvah and nobody else is around and having that count as something that we own as an ownership value that we can then prevent others from doing it? And all those kinds of issues Rav Yosef taught us about for the 19th of Adar. With thanks to the OU, Rabbi Jacob Romans, David Hochhauser, I bid you a good day.